Welcome to episode 15 of Nui Tech People with Ivan Demidov. Ivan's the founder of Virtual Perspective in Newcastle. Those are one of the very few companies dealing in the AR and VR space. Today we talk about some of the innovative projects he's worked on in Newcastle and currently working on, and also what's in store for their team going forward. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to episode 15 of Nui Tech People. Today we have Ivan Demidov from Virtual Perspective. Mate, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, pleasure to have you. I think I visited your offices maybe 6 months ago, maybe a little bit more, seen some of the cool stuff you guys are working on. I had no idea you even existed. I think you're probably building a reputation, and some people would know about what you guys are doing, but give us a quick overview of what is Virtual Perspective?
Well, Virtual Perspective is a company where a couple of us work, where we create virtual and augmented reality software, bespoke. So two scopes, someone comes to us and says, make us a training simulation of a fire warden scenario where we can train people how to escape a burning building, how to rescue people. We go away and do that. So that's one example. But also we do the augmented reality stuff. We do a lot of visualizations of, say, construction, demolition, revitalizing mine sites and new developments and that type of stuff too. So that's kind of the base level of certain things. But then we go all the way up to creating custom software that doesn't even exist. So that's the fun stuff to me. That's what I do.
Yeah, nice. What's your thoughts on Pokemon Go?
I think it's brilliant because now the nerds are taking over the world. They're really fit.
Yeah, nice. I think that's probably the most famous, AR type technology that's being, gone global, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Everyone knows about it. So whenever you say, what's augmented reality? You say, have you heard of Pokemon Go? Yeah. It's synonymous with that particular technology. It's kind of like mixed martial arts now called UFC.
Yeah.
It's a branding thing. So yeah. they did a great job.
So, mate, you guys are based in Newcastle, right?
Yep, Waters Bay.
Obviously, you're quite a niche market, AR, VR. May I stay looking at Newcastle?
Well, the cool thing about, and when I say Newcastle, I include, areas like Lake Macquarie, which is technically where we're at.
Yeah.
It's an incredible city in terms of recreation, lifestyle, and all that sort of stuff. Living expenses, obviously, nowhere near as high as in places like Sydney. And we're all very similar in that we enjoy the lifestyle that we have here. We don't like the crazy, rubbing shoulders to get to work and everything else that you find in bigger places. So we love it here. Also, I grew up here and this is my hometown. Meanwhile, I have moved away for work and stuff for my career. I've always wanted to come back, make this town a better place. And it's just awesome here. And it's a very vibrant community in terms of friendships that you have with people, relationships you have with people, as well as all the exciting stuff that we're doing in the city itself.
Yeah,
with the light rail and the construction. I mean, actually, it's pain for a lot of people, but, it's good to see investment happening in this area, which is cool.
Well, okay. Long term, right? Long term.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Think ahead.
Yeah, nice. Mate, AR, VR obviously probably didn't exist when you were at university or when you were a young fella. Mm-hmm. How did you get into this?
I did a lot of research, as I would do back in the day, around emerging technologies and everything like that. And VR has been around for decades as a thing that you could actually do. I mean, the military have been using it for a long time, a lot of other industries. The thing that made the biggest difference to me was when Oculus came out with their Kickstarter project to basically create an affordable VR headset that essentially everyone in the world could purchase and use. So much like the smartphone revolution, I saw that happening. And it is the next way to communicate, as far as I can see, where, there's radio, black and white television, TV, and now virtual reality and augmented reality is the next thing. Because it's a more efficient way to communicate certain things. And so when I saw that in the future, and now it's the present, I jumped on and I started working on it.
Nice. How long ago was that?
That was about 4 or 5 years ago when I first got my DK2, the Oculus Rift development kit, which I still have. I wish I brought it so I could show you.
Yeah.
But it's very cool. That actually was such an incredible leap forward when I first put it on. I thought, yeah, I was right. And then I couldn't wait to start working on making something in it.
Yeah, nice. And then, so what's your background? How do you...
Well, my background is enterprise IT support. So I worked for in-house IT teams and also outsourced IT. I had my own IT business doing support for other organizations and such, like doing a managed services, we call it.
Yeah.
And so I often would get frustrated with the quality and speed of different systems that I was forced to work with. And I thought, hell, if I could have a bit more control over this, I can maybe make it better.
Yeah.
And so that's what got me into programming and software development in the first place. So I figured I could make it, I could do a better job than that without knowing a single thing about how to actually do it. Once you see how the sausage is made, it becomes easier to kind of pick up, let alone what you need to understand in order to move forward and train yourself. So I do a lot of self-paced learning and that type of stuff, but that is my background is enterprise IT support. But there I saw opportunities for if I was to learn how to create software, you can give it to so many people and improve their quality of work or life or whatever it is that I thought, yep, that's what I want to do from now on.
Awesome. Yeah, there's so many different angles I want to go down from that. Hey, let's go with the self-paced learning for a sec there.
Yep.
In your space, there is no formal education in VR, AR development, right?
Not yet. Not if I have something to do about it, to say about it in the next couple of months.
Not yet, right?
Yeah.
That's another exciting project, it sounds. But, mate, how do you go about it? What platforms did you use? How do you go about, hey, this is a passion or this is an area that I want to learn in? Mm-hmm. How do you go about learning that?
Well, the main tool that what we use to create virtual reality experiences and a lot of the visualizations that we produce, we use a program called Unity, which is a real-time game engine and also a compiler, which means it can build standalone packages from code and 3D models and all the other things that go into a program out into its own thing. So whether it's an app for iOS or Android or PC, whatever it is, even Linux, it knows how to take whatever we have as elements, say 3D models or C# code or JavaScript, put it all together and make it something that will work on whatever platform we want, which is brilliant. So that's why I started there, because I knew that it had so much reach and so much potential. So Unity is one. We use Cinema 4D and Maya and 3D Studio something for the 3D modeling stuff. Excuse me, that's not my area of expertise.
Yeah, that's all right.
And I use Blender, which is another 3D modeling package. That's actually, by the way, open source. So if people are wanting to get into it, Unity and Blender are both free to use for personal use and training and stuff with very little limitations. So if you were someone that wanted to get into that sort of thing, there's your two tools you start with.
Awesome.
And also with the learning platforms, there's Udemy and Skillshare and YouTube tutorials you can just watch on how to do specific things. And also Unity and Cinema 4D have their own internal tutorial systems and all that sort of stuff, because they're trying to entice people to come and join, so they're trying to make it as easy as possible for newcomers to come on board.
Yeah, sure.
So they've got really excellent tutorials. We actually had a 13-year-old girl come and do work placement with us, and she went from start to finish on a Unity tutorial where she created a top-down shooting game where you're a little kid, you know, defending yourself from nightmarish monsters. It's a very popular Unity tutorial, and she did it from start to finish all by herself, essentially, asking us questions here and there. But you can see how accessible it is.
It's phenomenal.
If you give it to a child and the child can follow the tutorial, imagine what, you know, someone that knows what they're doing can do.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So that's why you went about it and then just have grown from that?
Yeah, absolutely. Nice. And the thing with what we do is usually there's no real answer. You can go and research.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, well, no one's done this before. Where do we go?
Oh, that's what I'm so interested in.
Yeah.
I think, you know, more traditional roles, right? You have a path that, hey, I'll go do X, then Y, then Z. And then at the end, you're a whatever that job might be, right?
Exactly.
And it's a very traditional path. More and more tech roles these days have a less traditional path. A lot of them start with a computer science degree or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, and you know, that could be a basis still for where you're going. But the technologies that you're working with haven't been around for long enough for there to be a traditional path into it. So
that's it.
Yeah, I just find it extremely interesting.
Yeah, well, it's one of the things we did, which technically on paper everyone says is impossible, which is augmented reality with night vision and augmented reality with a non-native camera on Android. And we were able to achieve both those things on the same project. So there was no documentation whatsoever. What documentation did exist said that's impossible.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of stuff we have to deal with. People say, you can't do that. And I'm like, all right, we'll see.
Yeah, nice. So, mate, that's crazy. I just want
to...
we'll link up a couple of your projects in our show notes, just because I think people will be really interested in some of the projects you've actually completed and things like that.
Oh, by all means, we have a really kick-ass portfolio as well as a 360-degree showreel. So you know how you can have social media 360-degree videos? We have a 360-degree showreel.
That's
so
awesome.
You can go and see some of the projects that are public-facing that we've made in 360. So if you had a VR headset, you can watch the showreel in VR.
Yeah, right.
Or you can use the browser or whatever platform you're using to click and look around and look at all different stuff.
That is awesome. We've got into this. I think it's obviously a pretty bold move then for you, somebody like yourself. It's like, well, I might think it's bold. You might think it's, you know,
natural progression.
Yeah, exactly. To go straight into that. But mate, how do you go about building a company around VR and AR when it's such a new technology?
Well, that was the funny thing is I think it might be worthvhile talking about how VP, Virtual Perspective, came about.
Yeah.
In general. Basically, Tim Davidson and I were both contracting to Dantia, which is a Lake Macquarie economic development company.
Yeah.
And we were doing projects for those guys without knowing each other. And then at the reveal of where I had done my part, I was introduced to Tim. He's the 3D modeling creative director in our team. So he can make whatever you want into the most incredible looking scenes and all that sort of stuff. And my expertise is the technical stuff. So I know how to make it work. And so it was a match made in heaven, essentially, where he can make it look good. I can make it work. What else do you need?
Yeah.
And so since that day, we started working out of my garage, my double garage that we turned into an office. Then we moved into a smaller office. Then we moved into a bigger office, which is where we met you.
Yeah.
And so it's just been growing from there. But basically, the way we've grown is being very strategic in not over-investing in like pipe dreamish type random things. What we create is something that has an immediate need or application. So that's why we've chosen to focus on the bespoke elements. So people come to us with a need or an idea already, and we know that they're going to implement it.
Yeah.
And part of our job now, since we've had more people come on board, is we've learned to take that, which is where we started, and the way we make it even more successful is we implement a strategy for actually maximizing the effectiveness of whatever we're making. So whether it's going out to the public, maybe a marketing plan, or if it's going internally, we offer suggestions on how to make it easier for people to use and all that sort of stuff. So someone might come in and say, oh, I want this, but then they're not aware of the better options yet.
Yeah.
So as a company, our job, every individual, is to offer the best possible advice on how to even improve the scope, let alone make the stuff.
So you're an education resource, really.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, educating your own clients is it's a very real part of value add. It's no different in most industries, right? Hey, recruitment's the same. Same, but different, right?
Absolutely. Well, our advantage is that people love to be educated in this crazy virtual reality, augmented reality stuff. They're like, oh, tell me more. Whereas usually people go, oh, they're going to like trying to browbeat me in a certain way. Where here's kind of like, here's all the cool toys. You know, what do you like?
Nice. So you've made mention of, you know, bespoke projects. Can you speak about some of the clients you've been working with at the moment or some of the projects you're most proud of?
Sure. Well, one of our favorite projects, my favorite probably at the moment, it does go up and down from time to time, depending on how I feel that day. But we've done Our Country, which is a virtual reality experience of Newcastle as it was thousands of years ago, with Indigenous elders taking on a journey around 9 different locations in Newcastle. And they speak in original languages and tell you all about different stories and heritage. And we've got visualizations of hunters and fishermen and kangaroos and all sorts of other stuff. So I would encourage people to go have a look at that. That's on YouTube, on the council page.
We'll also look that up.
Yep, and you might also find it on our website. But also, so that was one of the bigger ones. That was took about 2 years to make.
Wow.
So we've been working on that one since essentially the company got founded.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty big job. We did it, and we're really happy with it. Wow. And one thing I was working on this morning before I came here is a project where you are looking at the world through the perspective of a fuel molecule traveling through a diesel engine. So you come in through the fuel tank. It shows you all the different contaminants that could happen in a fuel tank and how to avoid them and everything. And then you kind of keep flying through the filter. Then you go into the combustion chamber and it explodes. And it talks all about like how that works and all these different things that you can identify as problems with the engine. And that's a marketing resource for a company in Germany.
Yeah. That's...
Basically, they sell these things that prevent all these problems that we're visualizing. Wow. So that's a very unique way to deliver your message, whereas otherwise it's a really difficult elevator pitch of what the thing that they make actually does. Where here, people want to go see it. And while they're enjoying themselves, they're also learning about the product.
Yeah, I think like for that German company in particular, right, I think there's going to be more and more companies, you know, that find something that's hard to actually educate the market on. Mm-hmm. You're looking at other avenues, right? Like traditional marketing doesn't work for that.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to educate your market. And hey, if something like virtual reality can do that in a way that's not been able to be done before, that's a phenomenal resource.
Exactly. It's like what I was saying about what got me into it in the first place. Like there's no way to communicate the thing that we're making any other way.
Yeah. How does a client in Germany come about, virtual perspective?
Well, they have offices around here, and basically they found us based on our other work and stuff that they've been doing. They looked us up and then came across us, and yeah, so we deal with people in Brisbane.
Great.
And it's really cool seeing it all come together. I'm actually super happy with how that one looks too. And that will be available to everyone as well once we're finished and we've got the sign off. So I'll encourage people to come back here and have another look.
Awesome.
Because you'll be able to see that one as well.
Great. Mate, what's the biggest challenge in trying to grow an AR VR company?
Well, it's finding the people, I guess. You probably appreciate this in your industry. It's where the trouble is, a lot of what we do, we don't know what it is yet until we get started.
Yeah.
So it's super important to have a good cultural fit for whoever you're hiring. And we've done really well with that lately. So we've got two new guys doing stuff. Basically, they've come to us and we've decided they're a really good fit. And so they're still there now. But yeah, that's the challenge is we've had work placement people here and there. Some of them have been amazing. Other people, you know, that's not what they want to do, and that's fine. But not everyone wants to work in an industry where they don't know what they'll be doing day to day.
Yeah.
Some people want
to. That's a challenge.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's been interesting, but we're doing really well. And I think just the culture in general in Newcastle has bred that type of person very recently around here.
Yeah.
So 10 years ago, we would have found no one.
Yeah. I think Newcastle's heading in a really great direction from a perspective of talent looking for other opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, outside of your traditional paths or traditional roles, they're looking for roles that excite them, projects that excite them, and I think that's where you probably had an advantage, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the conversations I have with companies, it's about, hey, the shoe's on the other foot at the moment. Like the talent have the power at the moment. It's, you gotta be able to offer them something cool to work on, something that really interests them. Maybe that's where you're at an advantage, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, like I say, it's not for everyone. Some people don't like that.
Yeah.
But we definitely all do. And that makes it really easy because we always get super excited about what we're doing. And always coming up with new ideas. You know, you have to be creative. And even in the programming space, which is my thing, you're sitting there typing away. It looks really boring, but you have to be creative in order to solve problems, solutions to which no one else has yet. So some people get intimidated by that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's nice to see that there's more and more people coming out in this generation that are into that sort of stuff.
Mate, problem solving is probably one of the greatest skill sets a developer could have.
Yeah.
Outside of actually like pure technical coding, hey, it can be done, it can be taught, but problem solving, mate, it's the skill, I think.
Absolutely. Well, that's where learning how to learn fast is a really important skill.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they're teaching that now.
Nice. Mate, what's the biggest misconception in the VR AR world?
Well, up until recently, I mean, until VP and a bunch of other companies kind of came on the scene, it was always looked at as something that the military would use, or, you know, something that's super expensive.
Yeah.
You could only get it at, you know, Disneyland or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's actually a lot more accessible than you'd think, because now phones can do VR, you know, in the right kind of headset. You've got the Oculus Go, which is an Oculus which is self-contained. It's got its own controller, wireless, no problems.
Yeah.
Don't need a phone or anything, and it kind of runs itself, and it's only about $300.
Yeah, right. So it's becoming more affordable.
It's totally more affordable these days, and to make a VR experience is not as expensive as you'd think. So that's a big misconception about kind of what we do. People go, oh, how much is that going to cost? Like $300,000? And we're like, well, no, not really. It's a lot cheaper than you'd think.
Yeah, nice.
In a lot of cases. And just because it's really available to people, and also the proliferation of virtual reality in general, all the marketing that's been done, the heavy lifting by all these other companies that are promoting their hardware or whatever else, makes it really easy for us to go, oh, well, that's the sort of stuff that we do. Would you like one of those?
Yeah, for sure. I've started watching some NBA through...
cool, is it?
Yeah. It's it looks like you're sitting in the front row, right?
Yeah.
Or behind the backboard, and you can see things from those sort of angles. So I can see definitely where the future is from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another project that we worked on, which is empathy training for nurses in nursing homes and stuff. It's basically reproducing... This is for Honey New England Health.
Yeah.
What it would feel like to be a patient with dementia. So the nurses and doctors put this on, and they... There's hallucinations happening, all sorts of other stuff. The purpose of the program is to basically make people aware of, if you set up a room incorrectly, you know, dimly lit, there's a thing over here that can trigger you know, anxiety and all sorts of other things.
Yeah.
So we have an example of a bad setup, an example of a good setup.
Yeah.
And so that's because if you walk a mile in someone else's shoes, you understand them a lot better.
For sure.
Rather than just theory.
Yeah.
And so that's another example of what VR can do. And that's super accessible because you can do that on a smartphone as well.
That's great.
Nothing stopping anyone from using it.
Nice. What's the growth plans for Virtual Perspective then? Is it, you know, is it more projects? Is it different industries? What's the plans?
Well, our pipeline is really big at the moment. So we're going to have to probably hire another developer pretty soon.
Yeah.
And also we don't have a plan in place as a concrete plan or even a timeline yet. But what we want to do is open up a satellite office somewhere else. So another office.
Yeah.
So that'll happen probably within, I don't know, conservatively 5 years, but realistically probably 6 months. Who knows?
That is the state of your industry, right?
Oh, it's craziness.
I guess it probably only takes one big client to come on board, right? One big project.
That's the thing, is like if we get six at once, we're going to have to hire, you know, six more people. So that's part of the challenge, again, is finding good people quickly.
Yeah.
Not everyone can do that because it's not like we're hiring someone to work on a conveyor belt, you know, assembling things. It's, you have to hire someone with really specific attitude, and you can't teach that.
Quick plug then. If somebody wants to come, you know, work in the VR, AR space, what would you be looking for?
Well, at the moment, we're looking for a C-sharp developer, potentially, preferably, with some Unity experience. Yep. And if you don't have it, you can easily go get it.
Yep.
I'm sure you'll have a lot of fun if that's the sort of person you are. So if you like those things, then there's a very good chance that there'll be a place for you.
Awesome.
In the next, you know, 6 to 12 months.
Cool. Oh, well, this will be an evergreen content, hopefully, and hopefully you get the right people knocking on your door.
Absolutely.
I think VR AR space is obviously growing, and it's, you know, growing quickly, and you guys are doing a phenomenal job in that space. But I imagine it's not without its challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been the biggest challenge for you guys to date?
Biggest challenge? Well, I guess while a lot of early adopters are really into the technology and they're already aware of it, not everyone knows what virtual reality is.
Yeah.
So the biggest challenge, I guess, is making people aware of not only what it is, and augmented reality too, but also how it might be applicable to their industry.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, the engine example, where you're flying through the thing, that was actually the client's idea, which is incredible. But not everyone is that creative in terms of their marketing. And so if you haven't seen virtual reality before at all, you might not know how to apply it correctly. But really, the challenge is to basically open people's minds to the potential of all these things.
Yeah.
Because even if you work in an industry where you think you probably can't use it, chances are you're not correct, because you probably have to train your people. You'd have to convey information quickly, make it interesting, all that stuff. The technology is just a tool. What we do is help people and businesses communicate well.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's probably the biggest challenge, is how do we convey that without falling back on, virtual reality is cool.
Yeah.
And then they don't know what it is.
Okay, great. And that's a challenge, right? That's a very real challenge.
Mm-hmm.
How do you sell that, hey, people don't walk around with a headset?
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't own a headset or Oculus Rift at the moment. How do you solve that problem?
There's a bunch of different ways. I mean, a lot of people already do have them.
Yeah.
Of course, the average consumer at home would not, probably, because, you know, unless you really want one, you're probably not going to get one.
Yeah.
And that's fair enough. But everyone's got a smartphone.
Correct.
So you can do virtual reality in that. You just get yourself a $10 Google Cardboard.
Yeah.
It splits the screen down the middle, two different projections, one for each eye. There's your virtual reality.
Yeah.
And the gyroscope inside the phone allows you to turn up and down, left and right, and you're actually moving in the space, just like if you had a $2,000 headset on.
Yeah, nice.
So,
and I assume a lot of your projects are B2B as well, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, people can walk in and actually have that headset with them.
Well, that's the thing, is like if you're doing a trade show or something like that, you would have a proper setup. I mean, I know we've done it plenty of times. We were at CBIT, we were at NAIDOC Week. You just bring your gear, set it up.
Or if you're running internal training, right, you probably don't have those headsets there for your users or employees.
Exactly. So you get, you know, five, and you'll get lots of mileage out of them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Whereas if you set an office on fire to simulate what it looks like, you're not going to get another go.
Nah, it'd be a costly experience. Mate, I think the whole space is really interesting. I think what you guys are doing is interesting, and you know, not many people would know about it. So, mate, touche for giving that a crack, finding that sort of that niche and, you know, going hard at it. Mate, going down that route is a risk. So mate, we've gone a little bit into sort of how you got into it, but, mate, prior to that, you went to TAFE.
Mm-hmm.
Mate, thoughts on TAFE as an educational resource?
I loved it, and I've actually got a pretty cool story, because what happened was in high school I had chosen all computer-based subjects as my electives, and then none of them ran because I was the only one that chose them. So I ended up with, ironically, business studies, which did actually help, so I'm thankful for that. But also a bunch of subjects that otherwise were my secondary choices. And while I had a great time at school and everything, I wasn't really learning what I wanted early on, because I kind of knew what I needed to get to where I wanted to go. That's why I chose those subjects. Didn't happen. Thankfully, the principal at the time, Peter Shegold at Katara High, noticed that and sent me and a few other people that wanted a few of the subjects off to do our Cisco CCNA over in TAFE as part of our high school. So we've got two units for learning and industry qualification, which is incredible. So that gave me a huge leg up.
Yeah.
And so I would recommend that, because TAFE is where you learn what school is not like while still learning stuff. It's more like work,
yeah,
at least in my experience.
Yeah. I did year 11 and 12. I did an accounting degree at TAFE.
There you go.
It was not the coolest. A great experience.
No, was it?
I, like I said, I don't like accounting.
Well, there you go. It was the opposite for me. Yeah. I was like, okay, I have to do this other stuff, but I can't wait to go to this.
Yeah.
And so that was awesome. So I was really thankful for that. And then after that experience, obviously, I knew exactly what I wanted. IT at TAFE full-time for about 2 years or so, and then straight to Sydney to do my first 24-hour roster, maintaining super high pressure, expensive servers 24 hours a day.
Wow.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. I think you're right. I'm TAFE. It's a different learning environment.
Mm.
I found the TAFE itself was great.
Mm.
It was just my course subject wasn't awesome. But I think it's a phenomenal resource, and it definitely suits the right people.
Definitely. Well, there's no substitute for experience, because not only do you learn things that you can't learn by studying theory, but also you learn more about yourself and the people that you're working with by putting your nose through the grind.
Yeah.
And being like, okay, how do we go with this? Yeah. Where do we improve? And you do that before you start the next project or job.
Yeah, and taking people out of the comfort zone of school as well, right? It's like, hey, he's in a new environment, he's a different type of people you might have to work with.
Yeah. And you have to learn how to meet people.
That's the real world, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the real world.
That's cool.
Matt, I think you've already touched on the other educational resources you've used to sort of bring yourself up to date.
Yeah.
I think, mate, what's your thoughts for other people if you had to provide advice for other people, how to educate themselves outside of formal training?
Yeah, the aforementioned online resources like Udemy, Skillshare, there's a plethora of those.
Mm-hmm.
Distance education, whether it's uni or TAFE or something like that, if you don't have access or you don't have the time, like say you already work full-time and you want to requalify or upskill yourself, that's a really good way to do it.
Yeah.
Coming soon, potentially some virtual reality training.
Yeah, that's nice.
Which would be awesome. So there's that, but that's a while away, I think. But yeah, so if you have the passion, self-paced learning is a really good tool, I think. And I do it from time to time. And I often don't finish them, because I get to about halfway and I go, okay, I can do the rest without finishing the other half, because I get the momentum and I understand what needs to happen after that.
You got what you need out of it, right?
Exactly.
That's awesome. Now, you just may mention there the training. Mm-hmm. You're obviously working full-time. This is your own business. You've got projects you're working on. I get a feeling that you've probably got some side projects you're working on using the same technologies and whatnot.
Always.
Mate, any exciting things to make mention of?
Personal stuff, not really. I mean, I dabble here and there. I mean, I'm working on a board game with kind of like a bit of levity to it. That's actually run inside a computer, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's just choices to be made and cards to play and all sorts of other stuff. So you can play with people that way. So I'm just working on that in my spare time. Nothing to do with virtual reality or augmented reality.
Yeah.
However, there are other ways we can take it. So if it was an actual board game, you can put the little cards on the desk, get your phone, and you can have little figurines interact with each other based on how you place them and where they are and how many of them and all that sort of stuff. So that might be coming. I want to do a scavenger hunt for Newcastle, basically an augmented reality one, where you have to solve puzzles, answer questions, traverse the city, discover points of interest in the city, and that'll be part of your journey. So you're doing a historical tour of Newcastle, essentially.
Yeah.
So Fort Scratchley's, for example, Customs House,
a
few other places, and there might be some quizzes and clues and stuff built in, maybe some time limitations as well, like you get different points based on how quickly you solve something or how quickly you go and find this. So that's a selfish plug for myself, I guess. Anyone who has access to a heritage site that wants to be part of the scavenger hunt that potentially everyone, it's a tourist, is going to want to play, hook me up with some information and access, because I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah, those scavenger hunts are massive in Sydney, right?
Oh, like, yeah.
They're on, there's a couple of different companies that provide them. They're on every weekend, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, tons of that stuff. And this is something you can do on your own time, any day of the week. Doesn't matter. It's all in your phone. You know, it's not done yet, but I'd like to get going on that one.
That sounds quite interesting. Mate, you've obviously got a lot on your plate then, running a business, the business side of things, as well as the technical side of things.
Yes.
And then as well as that technical aspect, you know, talking to clients, learning how to educate clients, yada, yada, yada. Mate, how do you run your day? What's a standard day look like for you?
We do the sprint planning methodology at work. So we basically plan a fortnight in advance of what everyone's going to do on what days. So when we have meetings, when we have, you know, dedicated work blocks, that type of stuff. Then Samantha, our project manager, normally is in charge of that. And so it's really nice to know when you can change gears and do the other thing. Whereas what I found in the past is if I was trying to do everything at once, nothing would actually get done properly or at all, which is a problem a lot of small business owners have, I think, where they're 100% efficient in whatever skill they're professionals in, but then everything else like accounting, that if they're not an accountant, bookkeeping, you know, all that sort of stuff, client relations, sales, you know, you can't be master of all those things. And if you are, then great, but you're not going to find people like that very often. So that's the challenge, is basically to figure out how to optimize your time. And that's how we do it. We do the sprint planning, and we basically delegate tasks we know need to be done to the best person for the job.
Yeah.
So that makes it easier. But there's still, of course, the challenge of, you know, we have to wear a lot of different hats. But that's cool, because it breaks up the day, breaks up the week. You know, I normally liked my day to be solely project time if I'm working, you know, on something solid. So I'd normally say, okay, those days are nothing but project days. I'm going to be locked in the room.
Yeah.
Don't turn the lights on, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And everyone else is great to have a team to be able to help me with all the other things. And vice versa, you know, sometimes they need to do that. And I'll step in and go, I'm going to go to a bunch of meetings and do this and that.
You know? Mate, I think one of the key points you made there was that hiring and building a team around complementary skill sets,
yes,
right?
Very important.
I think that's probably one of the most pertinent things in, you know, building out technology teams, is hiring for complementary skill sets, not hiring for just, you know, a set of skills, so to speak.
Yeah.
Some of the best people are, you know, technically are brilliant at what they are technically, and have massive areas of weakness otherwise, but that's them, right?
Yeah.
They're just wired in a different way to other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, building a team of complementary skill sets, so you aren't sitting there doing, you know, the things that aren't in your sweet spot, where it's a waste of your time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you've done that from, you know, building your team and finding a complementary skill sets within there.
Very important. Also very important to identify what skills people have that you might not be aware of, because you might find someone that's like a coder who's also good at networking for some reason.
Yeah.
That does happen. I mean, I might be an example. I don't know. Yeah. People might beg to differ.
Yeah.
But people say I communicate relatively well for a nerd.
You can hold a conversation, mate.
Yeah, well, I try.
Yeah.
I've studied the subject.
So you use Sprint, the Sprint methodology. Any productivity tools you use on a daily basis?
We use something, aside from all the stuff we use to create the things, our most important tool is called Toggle, which I'm sure there's tons of alternatives to it, but it's basically a time tracking tool. So whenever it's logging time against the job, or logging time against business development, or whatever it is that you're doing, it's very good to have reporting on those things. For the next sprint, say, like how many hours you have left on a job, how many can you allocate, when do you have to stop doing this and hand over?
Yeah.
Not that that happens very often, but, you know, you have to be aware of these things.
Yeah.
And so that's a really important one. It is sort of an accountability thing, like where have you spent your time, but it's more for business intelligence.
Well, especially when you've got clients, right, and you're charging yourself out, you don't kind of know how to charge future clients at how long a project
takes. Precisely. So that's happened to us a couple of times where we said, oh, yeah, it'll be this, and then we charge them that, but then it ends up taking twice as long, and we're like, well, we have to wear that now. So we don't charge by the hour like a lawyer or something. Like we say, okay, here's what you're going to pay.
Yeah.
If it costs us more time to do it, that's okay. That's our fault.
Yeah. Which would be extremely hard in a in a situation where you're building bespoke things that you've not done before, right?
Well, now we have like over 20 projects under our belt, so we're getting better. And plus, having Sam on board really helps.
Yeah, you need somebody to keep you accountable.
Well, that's it.
Yeah. But outside of obviously your learning, you may mention them, Do you read? Do you listen to podcasts? Is that other educational resources like that you use?
I wish I read more, but right now I'm kind of stuck to doing audiobooks and podcasts, obviously. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I love absorbing knowledge whatever way possible.
Yeah.
So I'm driving somewhere. Do you do similar stuff?
I do Audible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Audible subscription.
Nice.
I think there's about 25 books sitting in there. Probably about 7 or 8 unread at the moment. Or unlistened to. But
I've got to get your list after this.
Yeah, we'll chip away through that. Oh, mine are all over the shop. I go, heaps of philosophy and stuff like that.
Love
it's
it.
Just the way of thinking and understanding human behavior and that sort of jazz. I just find that super interesting.
I've got a really big stack of DVDs, believe it or not. I need to have a DVD player to watch them now. But it's on psychology. It's like the Teaching Company lecture series. It's about 12 DVDs long. I'm about halfway through it.
I'm super interested in sort of finding a flow state and how to do that, right? Like, I find sometimes, like, I'm working in the middle of the night. Like, I think my, like, sweet spot's between, like, 9:30.
At night?
Yeah, 9:30 at night. Kids are in bed. Yep. And I open up the laptop, and then next thing I know, it's 1 a.m.
Oh, or something like that. So,
like, between, like, I think it's, like, 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. is, like, I can just get in this, like, zone. If it's such a thing, a flow state or a zone.
Oh, of course.
I'd love to know how to turn that on, turn it off.
My theory on that is that it's because you have no anticipation of distractions. Whereas during the day, you might be working away, but there's always that thing of, like, the phone might ring or someone might walk through the door and ask me a question. Whereas at midnight, that's not going
to
happen.
Do I need to open up my phone and see if there's a little red button for a notification?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's kind of like you subconsciously, you're aware that you're not going to get distracted. And so you have that extra little bit of focus.
Agreed. Great. What's in your Audible library?
I don't have one of those, but I'm going to have one probably today. I listen to a lot of podcasts, random things here and there. Obviously, everyone likes Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that. Recently, I've discovered, not that recently actually, the Jocko podcast.
Yeah.
Also really good. And that's a really good book too. His book called Extreme Ownership.
Yeah.
Amazing. Samantha's listening to that as we speak.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that because it's a very different take on that sort of thing. And yet it's one of those things where it's so simple that everyone should know it.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to be told.
In a pretty hard and fast way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of efficiency and, you know, that guy's all about that.
Yeah, he is. Any others?
Just this week I discovered the Theo Von podcast, which is this last... Oh, man, I can't remember. But he's got a pretty distinct name, Theo Von.
Yeah.
And he has a very... He's a comedian.
Yeah.
And he has a very, very random sense of humor, so it makes me laugh because it's on my wavelength. But also he has guests, much like Joe Rogan, completely different subject matter experts and just talking about life and kind of like what their experience was like. Just Dee Snider was on there.
Yeah, right.
The guy from Twisted Sister.
Yeah.
And kind of like what happened to him. That's a pretty fascinating story, like where he was, what happened to him, where he's at now. You know, it's a really humanizing experience because you look at these rock stars and you go, wow, what are their lives actually like?
Yeah. And I love the biography.
Yeah. So it's that. Yeah. So, and he's really funny. A bit coarse language, but, you know, I don't mind a bit of that. I don't normally talk like that, but it can be funny if used correctly. So I'm down with it.
Great. There's an art in it.
Yes.
For some people, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's cool. If you had to wind it back and give yourself, you know, a younger version of yourself a little bit of advice, what would you do?
Start programming.
Yeah.
If I had started 10 years ago, man, I'd be so much better.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. But, and I did kind of dabble in it when I was younger. I used Dark Basic, which is like a archaic competitor to what Unity now is. It was a compiler where you have to write code, but it was so difficult. So the learning curve was really steep. But had I known how easy it would get once you kind of break through that wall at the start, when you start thinking in logic, it's really, really good. And so if I had any advice for myself is to get on that now, and if I had advice for kids today is the same advice.
How should a kid start to program?
Depends on their age, but there's a really cool program called Scratch for like 6 to 10-year-olds, I would say, somewhere in there.
Scratch.com, is it?
Google Scratch. It's created by the MIT, the university. In the States.
Relatively smart people.
Yeah, well, it's a really good tool because basically what it is, it's a drag and drop. What you see is what you get, but you build logic gates and stuff. So kids get to learn how all those things work without necessarily having to program. That's the hard part. It's like learning a language.
Yeah.
But if you could do it visually, and then get, you know, relatively immediate rewards because you have the lion growl and the flower comes down and whatever else. Yeah. They can see that they can create with their mind.
Yeah.
And so if you can open up that floodgate, they're more likely to stick with it and move on to something more advanced.
Yeah, right.
So Scratch is a good one.
Scratch.
Any older than that, I would say just get your teeth stuck into Unity because the tutorials are incredible.
Yeah.
And you can actually make a fully functional game doing a tutorial.
That's probably what would fascinate children as well, right? Yeah. Game development's going to be massive, and it's gaming's even, well, you know, it's grown by the day, I imagine.
Well, absolutely. We don't make games at work. While it will be fun, like it's a bit of a saturated market.
Yeah.
But if you can take what you have in your head and make it into a computer program, it's a very satisfying experience, at least for me.
Yeah.
So I would say if you're a kid, get into it because it's free and it's a giant library of resources. It's a whole encyclopedia of it. And yeah, it's not as hard as you think.
I think what you mentioned there is Scratch as well, right? That learning on learning the why behind it, mm-hmm. or learning the how.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the actual writing of code is going to become less and less and less important, right?
It's incidental almost at this point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's, you know, a few years ago or more than a few years ago, companies went down the route of, you know, outsourcing it or offshoring it, that type of thing. And now, you know, it's starting to write itself, right? Like, mm-hmm. So if you can understand the thoughts behind it and yeah. understand that, the logic, that's the win, right?
Yeah, if you see how the engine room works,
yeah.
you're much better off in anything you do to do with that
yeah.
thing. You understand the limitations and the potential, and you can modify it on the fly, kind of like someone in a small business that has IT skills themselves. So if they get an error on the computer, they don't go, oh, it can't work. They just fix it.
Yeah, password reset.
Exactly.
That's cool. Mate, I think we've touched on a bunch of your projects and things like that. We're going to link them all up.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you'd like to share from you know, the virtual perspective angle?
Yeah, I guess if you're not down with learning how to program or anything like that, or you do, and you're just not into it, everyone is a subject matter expert in something.
Yeah.
So I would encourage people to have a think about how virtual reality, augmented reality, could be used in whatever they do. And if there's a potential for us to do that, just give us a call. Like, we don't have to, I mean, it'd be nice if you had a budget in mind,
yeah.
but if you had a project that you would like to see if it had legs, just give us a call because we don't know everything. We're subject matter experts in creating this stuff,
yeah.
but I'm not a mechanic. I'm not a fire safety warden. I'm not a indigenous elder, you know. We need people that know these things to come and tell us how it should be done, and yeah, we'd more than love to hear it.
Yeah, and even if they don't have an idea whether VR or AR could be applicable, they've got a problem there, we're going to have a chat.
Yeah, not even project related, just say like, listen, I kind of heard that you do tech solutions to different problems, maybe there's one that we can work on together.
That's awesome. Nice. Mate, thank you for your time. I hope I to see more and more projects, especially, hey, if you could be working with other local companies, great.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal, mate. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.
For all the show notes, including all the links we discussed in today's episode, please visit newitechpeople.com.au. Hope you tune in next time.